Seems like every summer we're treated to images of Europe being absolutely overrun by tourists, to the point now where the locals have resorted to spraying them with water pistols. Certain streets around the world are now designated as open to residents only, and more cities are cracking down and limiting short-stay Airbnb-type rentals. Yet the crowds keep coming. On a recent trip across the pond, we couldn't even count how many times we'd see some fabulously dressed tourist setting up a tripod so they could spend the entirety of a perfect sunset taking hundreds of photos for a single Instagram post. Back here in America, overtourism seems to be most rampant in our national parks. And I struggle with that. I'm a national park nerd. I love those grand lodges with the huge fireplaces, the park ranger talks in the campgrounds, those brown signs with arrows pointing toward all kinds of adventures, each one a reminder that I am on vacation. These days, the national parks, what Ken Burns called America's best idea, have become prey to their own popularity. We live near three of them here in Washington State, and it's hard not to notice the impact. Crowded trails and traffic problems forced Mount Rainier National Park into using timed entry passes. You know, like at the Vatican or the Louvre. I'm Jeff Hoyt. This is Hoytus Interruptus. Now, don't get me wrong. In some national parks, Cindy and I have experienced absolute solitude. We have stood on desert cliffs, gazing out at vast stretches of undisturbed nature, experiencing a silence so silent that we could actually hear what a deafening silence sounds like. I have hiked for miles at dawn to be the solitary witness to a herd of elk in full rut in a meadow ringed by Rocky Mountain walls that reflected that haunting, ethereal sound of the bugling bulls. And Cindy and I once hiked all alone on twisting trails through Bryce Canyon under a full moon so bright that we never even thought about our flashlight. Peak memories all. But then there are also the troughs. Next day at Bryce, we were hiking up and out of the famous Wall Street Slot Canyon hike and saw so many people on the switchbacks above us that it looked like actual Wall Street, Manhattan edition. About 40 years earlier, we set out for a camping trip in Tennessee's Great Smoky Mountain National Park. It was October, well past the summer season, so we figured we'd have plenty of elbow room. Little did we know that we picked the weekend when, A, the fall foliage was at its peak, and apparently people like to see that, B, the annual Alabama-Tennessee football game was being played in nearby Knoxville, and it seems many fans kind of like to tie the Smokies into their football weekend, and C, the largest arts and crafts fair in the eastern U.S. was happening in Gatlinburg that weekend, right on the doorstep of the Smokies, a town that actually brags about being within a day's drive of nearly one-half the population of the United States. Since social media couldn't go back in time to warn us about any of this, we were spectacularly unprepared for what was about to happen. Hadn't made any advance campground reservations, so after failing for hours to find a spot, we finally went into an RV park in Gatlinburg and begged the owner of a giant rig to just let us pitch our little tent between their front wheels and just above a ditch that separated us from the main road into town. A saving grace was that the water running through the ditch did help drown out both the traffic and the RV's noisy AC unit. We tucked into our tent, closed our eyes, and pretended we were deep, deep in the forest next to a babbling brook. Next day, we headed for Cades Cove Loop. The National Park brochure described it as a leisurely drive along a beautiful valley road where you can stop along the way to see preserved home sites and cemeteries dating back to the 19th century. Ah, sounded lovely. But that's an 11-mile, single-lane, one-way loop, or at least it was back then. Once you're on it, you're doing it, no matter how long it may take. And that day, the critical mass of tourists and cars brought Cades Cove Loop to a complete standstill. Absolute gridlock. There were spots where nothing moved for over an hour. Walkers and cyclists would casually, and I might add snootily, breeze past us like we were standing still. because we were. Years later, I took a solo trip to Glacier National Park in northwest Montana. Wanted to hike the Highline Trail, 15 miles of spectacular hiking along a narrow trail, much of it carved into a steep mountain wall with drop-offs in the thousands of feet. The scenery is astonishing, but you do have to keep your eyes on the ground because, one wrong step and, not good. I set out at first light. I was the only car in the parking lot. And holy shit, I couldn't believe the spectacular views, and it was all just for me. When I turned back, I saw my first other hikers of the day, two people rounding a corner off in the distance. Then two became a dozen, and more kept coming, 40, then 50, then 60 people, all slowly advancing toward me single file along this narrow mountain trail. Why were they so clumped up? Didn't any of them want to break away from the pack? And then I saw my answer. They were following a leisurely mountain goat who was in no hurry at all and very much headed my way. When he got to within about 30 feet of me, he stopped. Everybody behind him stopped. The throng of tourists silently waited for me to mull my options. I could reverse course and lead the goat in the direction it was already going until the trail widened out enough for him to get safely past me. But I'd just been that way. I knew that would take an unacceptable amount of time. My only alternative was to become the wall, just spread eagle my body against it and see what happens. Chose the latter. I became the wall, digging my fingers into every little crevice or outcrop they could reach. Once the goat realized I was leaving him an opening, he started toward me, cautiously at first, but then, I guess in order to get it over with as quickly as possible, he broke into a little trot. I wondered, is he trying to pick up speed so he can get more lift when he butts me off this wall and into oblivion? Nah, he slithered right past me. Even gave me a little don't-try-any-funny-business tap on the ass with his right horn as he passed. I had a feeling this wasn't his first encounter with tourists. Then I had to let the long line of humans slither past me, too. There were so many of them, apparently perfectly content to walk along this narrow path, one in front of the other, for however long they had to follow that goat. At least I'd had the entire first half of the hike all to myself. So over the years, my best pro tip for enjoying these sacred places in our national parks, well, that's simple. Get there first. Beat the crowds. And never did my son Eli and I learn this lesson more clearly than in Zion National Park in southwestern Utah. The Narrows is, as you might guess from the name, the narrowest slot canyon in the park, with walls that can go up 1,000 feet. And the Virgin River runs through it. The only way through the canyon is to mostly wade and eventually, in some places, swim. Lots of rock scrambling along the way. You can't drive to the Narrows trailhead. You got to take the park bus. So one early morning, Eli and I lugged our rented water boots and walking sticks onto the Park Service's first bus of the day. When we offloaded, we stepped up our pace to put as much distance as we could between us and the other hikers. Once we had it all to ourselves, we could just revel in it. We waded around massive boulders, listening to the birds and the river, watching the early morning light slowly make its way down the canyon walls. It was perfect, an indescribably cool experience. Although, since I just described it, I guess it's not all that indescribable. We poked our way upriver for a good 2 hours, before reaching the spot where we'd have to swim the next leg through very cold water, so we called it a day and turned around. Now, to that point, we had encountered precisely zero other people. But heading back, it only took 5 minutes, maybe, to meet up with our first hiker. Then came a couple more, then another. Of course, as it should be. But you know, I wasn't really thinking about the fact that this is a national park. Several buses per hour would be unloading all day long. So I started keeping a loose count in my head. Around the next bend, there's a dozen or so, then 30 or 40 more scattered along the river. First came the physically fit and younger hikers that had gotten as far as we had. Farther down the canyon were families with kids stopping and playing along the way, as many as 80 within visual range at one time. Toward the end, the hikers got older, slower, only going out for a short distance, getting a sense of the experience, and then, okay, I'm good, and heading back to the bus. When we reached the trailhead, Eli asked, "How many?" 1,253 people now populated the stretch that we'd hiked completely on our own just a few hours earlier, and that was just one slice of one morning in the first stretch of a four-month season. This is what I think of when I hear that the national parks are being loved to death. Figure in politically motivated staff and budget cuts, fewer foreign visitors for reasons that aren't that hard to figure out, and it's all tamped down the crowds some, but only by about 7%. Not much of a dent. Now, I'm not going to go all mayor of Amsterdam and stand at trailheads waving a tourist go home sign, because that just flies in the face of why these parks exist in the first place. And since I quoted Ken Burns earlier, why stop now? In particularly tough times, he says, we fall back on these questions of who we are, where do we come from? The national parks are our best idea, and therefore are the places where we can find the answers to those questions. It's essential to the survival of the country that people use their national parks. We want people to go out and see their property. You own the grandest canyon in the world. All you have to do is go out and visit it. To that I would add, okay, fine, there are openings at 2:30 Tuesday and 10:15 Friday morning. Which one works best for you? From an island in the upper left-hand corner of the lower 48, that's Hoytus Interruptus. I'm Jeff Hoyt.